let me tell you about two songs that I particularly like. The first you may well know, What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong, the old jazz singer. You'll be relieved to know that I won't sing it for you. Firstly, I can't get as deep as him, and secondly, I can't sing in tune anyway. Here are some of the words. I see trees of green, red roses too. You couldn't remember the next line, actually. I don't know if anybody here can. It goes on, I see the bloom for me and you. Thank you. I see friends shaking hands saying, how do you do? Do you know the next line? They're all saying, I love you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Audience participation early on, thank you very much. People love that song. They love it because it's true. Our world is full of love and wonder and delight. You feel that when you go for a walk on the forest, don't you? You feel it especially in friendship and in love. In last week's sermon, if you were here, or if you weren't, let me just remind you that you know what we talked about. We saw God's opinion on the world and on people. And his opinion is, it is very good. It is his opinion. God makes the world and looks at it and says, it is a wonderful world. The other song that I like, you probably don't know, it's called Everything is Broken. It's by Bob Dylan. Now, I like Bob Dylan. I know not everybody likes Bob Dylan. My wife thinks I like him because he's just an old depressive. I think I like Dylan because he's one of the few people who I can sing along with without feeling I've murdered the song. Or feeling at all inadequate. In Everything is Broken, Dylan sings this. Broken treaties, broken parts. Streets are filled with broken hearts. Broken words never meant to be spoken. Everything is broken. Now, it's not a very cheery song, but it too is telling the truth, isn't it? Dylan is just right about the world. Look at the environment. He's right about us. Watch these tenders, watch Crime Watch UK. Look at yourself and be honest about the things and the thoughts that you really have. And the feelings that you really have. And you have to admit, everything is broken. Now the passage we're looking at tonight, Genesis chapter 3, explains quite simply how everything got broken and spoiled. It's really very simple. Everything got spoiled when we got spoiled. And we got spoiled when we spoiled our relationship with God. You may remember those who were here last week. We looked at this idea that we are made in God's image. Turn back, let's just remind ourselves of this. The very first page of the Bible, Genesis chapter 1. Verse 26. Then God said, let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness. God made us to be like him so that we can relate to him. That's what the image of God means. But we have spoiled that relationship, and we have spoiled God's image in us. Leave that there for a moment for those who are taking notes. Just to say, if you don't normally take notes in the notebook in front of you, you may find it helpful, particularly in this sermon. We have spoiled God's image in us. Let's see how we did that. How we spoiled God's image in us. Here's what the first human beings did. Adam and Eve were persuaded that God wanted to spoil their freedom. Just have a look at what God commanded them. Over the page, chapter 2, verse 17. Here's what God commanded them. tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall not eat. For in the day that you eat of it, you shall die. Just before that verse, you may freely, though, eat of every other tree of the garden. But this serpent comes along and he makes God sound like a spoil sport. So verse 1 of chapter 3. The serpent was more crafty than any other wild animal that the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, "Did God say, you shall not eat from any tree in the garden?" Of course God had not said that. He said there's only one tree that you can't eat from, but the seeds of doubt are sown. And you see that in the way Eve replies to the serpent, because she gets confused. She makes God's command sound stricter than it was. So verse 2. The woman said to the serpent, "We may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden. But God said, you shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the middle of the garden, nor shall you touch it, for you shall die." God hadn't said anything about touching the fruit. But we make God sound stricter. And he really is. Isn't it true? Many friendships are spoiled when we decide that our friend is frankly boring. They don't want to do the exciting things that we want to do. They're restricting our freedom. Many marriages are spoiled when one partner decides that the marriage vows that they took, "I take you to be my wife, forsaking all others," that is just restricting their freedom. The same has happened to our relationship with God. We've been persuaded often by the lie that God is a spoil sport who wants to restrict our freedom. So having believed that, Adam and Eve take the next step. They decide that they wanted to be God. They wanted to be God. The one tree God said they shouldn't eat of was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Did you see what the serpent promised them if they did eat of that tree? Have a look at verse 5 of chapter 3. God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. And the serpent is dead right. See verse 22, what happens when they do eat it? Then the Lord God said, "See, the man has become like one of us, knowing good and evil." It's hard to know exactly what this phrase, "knowing good and evil," means. It can't mean what you might think it first means. It can't mean knowing the difference between right and wrong, because God made us to know that right from the beginning. It probably means deciding for ourselves what's right and wrong without listening to God. See, only God should be the one who decides what's right and wrong. But we say we want to decide that for ourselves. We want to knock God off his throne. We want the power of right and wrong for ourselves. Do you see what we've done? God made us to be like him, so that we could relate to him. But we wanted more. We wanted to be God, deciding for ourselves what's right and wrong. I guarantee that at some point tomorrow, you will say something that you know you shouldn't, but it'll just come out anyway. Or you'll do something that you know you shouldn't do, but no one's looking, so you can get away with it, and you do it. Going on is you will try to be God, deciding for yourself what's okay for you to say and do. Have you seen any of those clips of the really terrible singers who tried to get on Pop Stars or Pop Stars The Rivals or Fame Academy? There are about 28 programs like that now. I haven't watched them, of course. I've just heard about this from Rory. These are the people who didn't get past the first audition and should never really have gone to the first audition anyway. They can't sing, they can't dance, they can barely spell their own name and walk in a straight line. And when you see their auditions, all you can think is, why did they turn up? Didn't they know that this clip would be shown on TV for the nation to laugh at them? They have no place being there. Don't they know how awful they are? We have no place deciding for ourselves what's right and wrong, deciding to be like God. It is awful and horrific when a human being made to be like God decides to try and be God. But starting with Adam and Eve, every single human being, if you can put it this way, has gone to that audition, has auditioned for God. And if you do that, it simply spoils our relationship with God. A spoiled relationship is always painful, isn't it? If you argue with your best friend, it just hurts. Well, here is how our spoiled relationship with God hurts us. Well, first of all, we've got to think about this. We have a spoiled relationship with God Himself. Have a look at verse 8 of chapter 3. Then they heard the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden at the time of the evening breeze. And the man and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God. That is so sad. God made us to be with Him. But now we're ashamed before Him. It's true, isn't it? Are you really happy, really comfortable with the idea that God knows all the things that you think? He knows what your deepest desires are. And when we stand naked before God like that, we want to do just what Adam and Eve did, run away. We also blame God. God asks Adam and Eve, He confronts them, why have you disobeyed me? And their answers are just pathetic. They're the kind of answers you get if you catch a three-year-old with its hand in the biscuit tin saying, why are you stealing biscuits? You know the kind of pathetic excuses children come up with. Have a look at verse 12. See the excuses that we come up with. The man said, thinking fast, the woman you gave to be with me, she gave me the fruit from the tree and I ate it. It's your fault, God, said Adam. If you hadn't given me this lovely woman to tip me away, I wouldn't have gone wrong. We think the same kinds of things, don't we? If God hadn't put me in that situation, I wouldn't have had to lie my way out of it. It's God's fault. We're ashamed, we blame God, and we're also banished from God's presence. Look at verse 23. Therefore the Lord God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from which he was taken. God drove the man out. There's only room for one God in God's presence. And if we start trying to be God, well, we have got to be kicked out. And we feel the hurt of that banishment all the time. You feel it every day of your life. If you're longing for something in life, you're thinking, there's something out there for me, and I just haven't got it yet. And no relationship, no amount of money, no new entertainment gives you what you're looking for. What you're experiencing is what it is like to be banished from God's presence. No wonder you feel like a fish out of water half the time. No wonder you think, I'm an alien being brought up on the wrong planet. If I could find the right situation, I would feel at home. maybe our creatures feeling what it's like to be cut off from our Creator. We also have spoiled relationships with each other. Just as we're ashamed before God, we're also ashamed of ourselves before each other. So have a look at verse 7. Then the eyes of both were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made loincloths for themselves. Well, we don't just hide our bodies, do we? We hide our true selves from each other. One of the most moving films that I know about family relationships, I don't need to sing it, is a film called Secrets and Lies. It's about petty jealousies and lies within families. In the crucial scene, in a family birthday party, one of the characters just can't take it anymore. And he shouts out, "Secrets and lies! Secrets and lies! Why can't we share our pain?" Good question. And the answer is found in Genesis chapter 3. We've spoiled our relationship with God, and so we are ashamed before each other. We also blame each other. We blame God, we blame each other. We saw that in verse 12, didn't we? The man said, "God, the woman you gave me to be with me, she gave me the fruit, and I ate." It's the woman's excuse, verse 13. The woman said, "The serpent tricked me, and I ate." We start off by blaming each other. If that doesn't work, we continue by blaming snakes. Let me tell you, there's an old joke, which many have heard it. You know, Adam blamed God, and he also blamed Eve. Eve blamed the serpent, and the serpent didn't have a leg to stand on. I won't tell you that joke, because it's very corny and very old. Let me instead tell you about the time I knocked over a flower pot at home when I was a kid. I'd come charging down the stairs, and I sent this flower pot and the soil and the plant flying. And I tried to clear up the mess, but my mum can still, she had the ability then, she can still spot a mess at a mile off. And she saw it, and we had the Inquisition. Who knocked the flower pot over? I tried blaming my sister, but she doesn't do things like that, she's too perfect. So I blamed the cat. He said that he hadn't done it. So I was the guilty party. But I tried everything to make out I had not done it. It wasn't me, God. Now, as you grow up, well, we give up on the obvious lies, don't we? But isn't it true? Our first reaction remains, it wasn't me, it was someone else. Our first reaction is to blame others. Genesis 3 just explains that, why that is. And there's another thing. We desire to rule over each other. Worth reading this verse. Have a look at verse 16. Actually, halfway through that verse. "Your desire," God says to Eve, "your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." This is one of God's judgments on us for spoiling our relationship with him. It's hard to know exactly what he means. I think the best explanation is that here desire means not just sexual desire. It means also the desire to dominate the other person. We see this all the time in relationships, don't we? The woman is trying to get her own way with the man, to control him, by manipulating him emotionally. The man responds by trying to dominate the woman. But because men are less subtle than women, their attempts at controlling are less subtle. If you think this isn't true, well, look seriously at your own relationships And if they're perfect, well, watch Kilroy or Tricia or Jerry Springer. Again, Rory's told me about these. You see this played out again and again, don't you? The woman your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. We spoiled our relationships with God and with each other. We also have a spoiled relationship with the physical world around us. I don't have time to go into this deeply. Just have a look at verse 17, what God says to Adam. To the man, he said, because you've listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree, about which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you. The physical world is in a mess because we've spoiled our relationship with God. We are the pinnacle of God's creation. We've spoiled the relationship we have with the source of our life. No wonder that because of that, the whole world has gone wrong. Now that's a bit of a whistle-stop tour through this passage, isn't it? Maybe you've just picked up one or two things that you particularly want to learn or that are spoken to you. Let me just suggest, though, three things in answer to the question, what should we take away from this? Well, firstly, take the Bible's explanation of your life seriously. I know that there are a million and one questions that you might want to ask me after the service about this passage. But at least take away this. Genesis 3 contains the best explanation of the mess that the world is in and the mess that our lives are in that you will find anywhere. Feel the force of this chapter explaining what it's like to be you. If you've recently become a Christian, maybe you see with an extra clarity and depth. Admit that your spoiled relationship with God is the real cause of your problems. Our biggest problem is not that we're not popular enough or attractive enough or talented enough to get beyond the first audition on Popstars or lovable enough or rich enough or clever enough. That is not the cause of our problems. Our biggest problem is our spoiled relationship with God. Everything else flows from that. And once we've learned that, that will save you a lot of effort. Because that'll mean you will put your effort not into anything else, but into restoring your relationship with God. And thirdly, have hope in what God will do. Because we know, don't we, the Bible doesn't end at the end of Genesis 3. God doesn't leave us banished from the garden. There is great hope, and the hope is hinted at here, even in this passage. One final verse to look at to show you that. Look at verse 15. A great verse. God speaking here to the snake. I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your offspring and hers. He will strike your head, and you will strike his heel. So a descendant of Eve will crush the serpent's head, although the serpent will get a strike at that descendant's heel. Now, if you know clearly about Jesus, you can see a prophecy here, can't you, of his crucifixion, which, as our second reading said, puts an end to death, even as Jesus dies. That is what God does to get us back in into relationship with him, to unspoil what we've spoiled. That is the hope that there is. And that is what we'll be looking at in much more detail next Sunday evening. Let's bow our heads to pray.